Good morning, my name is Steve Ossetani. I wanted to say, Steve Ossetani, you are on the first tee, but I was having a little PA problems there. Originally, I was asked to speak today on the basis that we've been without a pastor for quite a while. And I agreed to be responsible for November 10. And as luck would have it, we seem to be overflowing with pastors today. I saw Pastor Nomi, Pastor Iwasaki, Pastor Wolf, and Pastor Dwart. So although I'm happy and excited to be here, I'm also nervous, and this is more pressure. But you know, part of my talk today is you never know what's going to happen, and you just have to adjust, make adjustments, and proceed accordingly. So here goes. A few weeks ago, Pastor Rolf Watts was our guest speaker. He gave some advice that he learned when he was in seminary school. He said, and I quote, "Never start a sermon with an apology." I heard that, I said, oh, really? Well, knowing that my turn was soon fast approaching, I went home and I rewrote my introduction. I took out anything even closely resembling an apology. So now there's a big hole in my speech. I was going to try to sugarcoat it for you, but now I just have to tell you straight up. You're going to get a golf sermon this morning. You want a layperson to come in here and don't do the conventional, you're going to get something different today. I'm not apologizing for it. I'm just saying that's what we're going to do. Now, the title of my talk is Just a Shot Away, although the bulletin says Just a Show Away. But you know what? Let's just work with this. I could just recalculate, just rethink this out, and let's just keep going. You might be thinking that it's odd to be getting a golf sermon on Sabbath, but I actually have a theory. I think there's some interesting parallels that things that go on a golf course and things that go on in church. Oh, let me just back up and say, I entitled this Just a Shot Away, and I should explain that to you. It's a golf term, and it means one of two things, depending if you're an optimist or a pessimist. If you're an optimist, it means that at any time, no matter how you're playing, something amazing can happen at just one shot. Your luck can just turn. So an optimist will be ready, and he'll be expecting that. A pessimist, on the other hand, will think just the opposite. Just one shot and disaster can happen. And he'll play with fear, thinking that, man, it could happen at any time. I have an example that illustrates this because this happened to me. And it also happened to my wife, Gail. And probably anyone that golfs, it's probably happened to you too. I could tell my story or I could tell Gail's story. It's a little embarrassing, so I'm going to tell Gail's story. Sorry, sweetheart. We were golfing one day and she was having a really hard time. She was having such a hard time that she said, Steve, I don't want to play anymore. I don't know what you see in this game, but I've had enough. I'm just going to pick up my ball. You can have all this golf equipment back. I'm not playing anymore. I said, well, you know, okay. Do you mind if I finish? She said, yeah, you finish. I'll just walk. So she walked on one side of the fairway. I walked down the other side. And she just took her time, and we got to the next hole, and she said, you know, I think I feel a little better. I've reconsidered. Maybe I'll try and tee it up again. So I said, sure, you go ahead. You do whatever you like. So she teed up her ball and took aim, she swung and she just hit, she topped it. And she said, oh, all the life came out. And then she got upset all over again. Said, I don't know why I had such false hope. I'm never playing this game ever again. That's it, I've had it. So I said, okay, you know, it's your call. You do what you need to do. And I kind of have been there before myself, so I just stayed away. And so we came to the very last hole, which was the next hole. She said, you know, I'm tired of walking with this ball in my pocket. I'm tired of walking with these tees in my pocket. I'm just going to tee it up one last time because I don't need this stuff anymore. So I said, oh, yeah, sure, go ahead. So she just went down, bent over, and she just stabbed the tee in the ground, put the ball on there, took her club, and she just took it back and just swung like she didn't care where it went. And you know what happened? That ball just went sailing through the air. It was amazing. And she just stared at it, was looking at it. She said, ooh, that was fun. Can we come back next week and do this again? I said, hey, wait a second. I thought that you weren't going to ever do this ever, ever again. But yeah, but that was until that happened. You know, just one shot away, you can change your mind so fast. Well, back to my theory about these mirror images that happen on the golf course and in church. I've noticed that on a golf course, there's people with just different skill levels, from the elite to the very beginner. But when they get together, because they have a common bond, golf, they all play together. And you know, the better person, he doesn't think that he's any better than the beginner. And they play, they help each other, everybody gets along. And in church, people have different levels of understanding. Some have been in the church a long time. Some people are new to the church. But you know, everybody, we have a common bond. And we worship together. And no one person thinks another person better than the other. But we worship as one. On a golf course, some people think that, you know, the most important thing on a golf course is to have fun. And you should enjoy yourself, even if it means you don't follow all the rules. Other people think, oh no, you can't do that. You have to play by the rules. And they're kind of quiet. They're serious. And they're about improving and getting better. And the other group, they're not worried about that. They just have a different focus. You know, in church, I kind of see the same thing. I'm not saying one group is better than the other, but I just see it. And the important thing is there ever going to be a group that takes their faith seriously and tries to improve, but yet at the same time, they really enjoy doing that and they have a lot of fun? That's my hope and my dream for this church. One last comparison that I'd like to make, a little bit on the humorous side, but even the time frame that it takes, going to church, going to golf, it's remarkably similar. For instance, if I went to a golf course and if I teed off at 9:30, 10:30, 11:30, 12:30, 1:30, about 1:30 or 2 o'clock, I'd be pow. I'd be walking off the 18th green, ready to go home. On the other hand, if I come to church, come to Sabbath school at 9:30, 10:30, 11:30, 12:30, about 1:30 or 2 o'clock, I'm pow with potluck, washing my salad bowl, I'm ready to go home. Even the time frame is very, very similar. Not that I'd ever mistake the two, but I'm just saying, there's similarities. They're kind of like mirror images. And it's caused me to think from time to time. I borrow lessons from one kingdom, like my golf side, and I sometimes apply it to lessons I want to learn on my church side. For instance, This week, as I was preparing this talk, I started to have a hard time. And I think, man, this is a lot of work. I really respect pastors that do this every week. This is just like once in my lifetime, and this is driving me nuts. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this. Well, a thought came to me, hey, I can take the easy way out. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to say, just forget all this. I'm just going to go online, and I'm going to find an interesting, entertaining story that somehow has some kind of spiritual application. I don't care what it is, just anything will do. And I'm going to match it to some kind of text. I'm going to just print it out, and I'm just going to read it to everybody. I mean, how easy is that? That sounded like a great idea. No more staying up and figuring out what's going to go where. I'm just going to use somebody else's stuff. Well, I was all set to do that. And then I thought to myself, you know, my golf background is starting to kick in. What if I used that same philosophy, that same rationale, and made a mirror of an image of that and used it on a golf course? Would I ever walk up to my ball and say, you know what? I should figure out how much yardage I have to the green, and I should figure out like what club I need, and nah, never mind. I'm just going to take the easy way out. Just give me any club. I'm just going to hit it. I'm just going to get this thing over with. I know this obligation is causing me too much stress. I just want to get up here and get it over with. You know what would happen if I had that attitude? Let me tell you, it never works out. I've been there and done that. Any good golfer will tell you, you never, and I mean never, hit a shot half-heartedly. It just doesn't work. You just don't do that. And I know that. I know it on a golf course. Why would I think that it would work in church? It doesn't. In church, we teach ourselves, look, you be hot or you be cold, but you don't be lukewarm. In golf, we say, you give every shot 100% of your attention, or you give it 0%. But you don't do it half-hearted. So I'm here today giving you my own views, stuff that's meaningful to me. It's what I believe in, it's what I live for, but it's me. It may not be as polished as other pastors that are normally here from week to week, but it's the best. I'm trying to do the best I could do, and that's all I can ask for myself. Being here, you know, I'm actually quite nervous, and I could say even this reminds me of golf, because I've stood on the first tee, and just like right now, when you go up to the first tee, you can feel people just watching you, because when they call your name and you go up there, there's people talking and people driving their carts and people eating. But when you walk up and when you tee up your ball, all of a sudden, there's just total silence. Whoever said that the sound of silence is deafening, he must have been a golfer, because you just know everybody's watching you. And you know, you do not want to hit a bad shot, because you don't want to have to do the whole thing all over again. So you just do the best you can. And I developed something all by myself to help me in that exact situation. I call it the Steve method to better golf. You won't find this in a golf magazine, not on an instructional DVD or in a golf book, because it was my own invention, for better or for worse. See, Steve is an acronym for a five-step plan. I don't know who Steve is, he's just some random guy, but it helps me remember. So let's say I'm tired, hot, cranky, depressed, and nervous. This method will work. And the nice thing about this is that even though it was designed on a golf course, I find that I could use it at home if I'm tired, cranky, grumpy. I could use it at work. I could use it anywhere. And I'm going to share it with you, and I want to ask you if you'd be interested in trying it yourself. It was made for me, and it was originally designed to work on a golf course, but you could tweak it a little bit, okay? So let's say I'm really nervous. The first thing I do is I take a step back and I draw a line in the grass and I give myself a little momentary timeout. And during this little timeout, I don't tell anybody what I'm doing, but I just take a few deep breaths, because most of the time when you're nervous, you don't really breathe. And when you don't breathe, air just really doesn't get to your muscles and you get tense and you can't swing. So I take, you know, a deep breath. I try to relax. I might take a sip of water. But I start the S in Steve. And I just survey. I just look at the hole that I'm at and I say, you know what? What is it that's making me so nervous? Like, what's my problem here? Or like right now, why am I so nervous? What is it that I'm so anxious about? Is it you people? Yeah, it is. But if I just survey and just look, I'll just make a mental note. I'm afraid of these people. Okay, on a golf course, I could be afraid of the trees. I don't like this big body of water right here. I don't like those bunkers. I just make a mental note of it. And then I move on to T. T is more important than S. T is, I gotta pick a target. What can I aim for so that I won't go into the water, into the trees, into the bunker? Or if I'm here speaking to people that are making me nervous, instead of a target, I could maybe tweak it and say, what kind of goal can I create for myself? What kind of objective? What can I try to accomplish here? Just try to think of something. Because the nice thing about thinking about a target, I'll usually pick like a tree off in the distance, or I might pick the flag if I'm shooting for the green. I'll just lock into that. And when you focus on that, and if that's all you see, pretty soon everything else to the side, it starts to disappear. That's amazing. And you know, I should have known that. Because when you focus on Jesus, and that's all you think about, don't your problems, don't they start to like fade away? The more you concentrate, the more a solution starts to come into focus. It's better to replace in your mind a target, something positive, than to think in your mind something that is negative and you're afraid of. Even though that water and that tree and that bunker is something that I really want to avoid, I've made a mental note of it, but I'm going to replace it with something positive, a target. Because even though I don't want to go in the trees, you know, the golf mind, it doesn't understand the word don't very well. And if you think, don't go in the water, don't go in the water, don't go in the water, if that's all you think about, when you hit the ball, you know where it usually goes? It goes in the water. So I always say, my target is that flag. And I keep focusing and I just stare it down. I try to be specific too. My target is not just something over there. I try to pick a noun, something that the mind could just really focus on. In Hebrews 12:2, look unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. If you're not a golfer, then a target is synonymous with a goal, or an objective, okay? But just focus on something concrete. Next is I go to E, and I evaluate. Now that I have a target, I start to form a plan, and I say, what do I need to do to actually get my ball to that target? Because, you know, if Tiger Woods was here, he may pick a target way down there, but for me, I don't have his skills. I might have to pick a different target. Is the target that I selected, is it actually reasonable? Is it doable? Just kind of think it over in your mind and make a plan. You know, like, I think I could, that's reasonable for me. And what club do you need to use? You know, so I figure out the yardage and I'm doing a little math and I'll pick a club and then I'll think, well, you know, if it's uphill, I need a little more. If it's downhill, I need a little less. I think about the wind. I'm just calculating and just saying, and just thinking about, is there any other options available to me? But eventually, I'll settle and I'll make a decision. And once I make a decision, I stick to it. And I don't want to be wishy-washy. Most mistakes that people make is right here, is they can't decide what to do. And you know, if we cannot decide what to do, we should ask somebody that has experience. And you know, the nice thing about this church is there are people here that can help you, especially if you have spiritual concerns or if you're struggling with somebody. Ask somebody, get guidance, and ask them to help you make a decision. But even if they help you, make sure that whatever you decide, make sure it's your decision. Take responsibility for what you decide. The next thing is I do V. I visualize. Where there is no vision, people perish. And on a golf course, if you don't have a vision of your shot, it's not going to happen. By vision, I don't mean hypnosis, but I mean vision of, have I ever taken this club and have I ever hit it good before? And I try to remember. And I'll think, yeah, I remember. I was at such and such a place, I had this club, I hit it really good. If I have a memory like that, those are what I'm trying to remember. And those are the kind of memories I'm trying to see in my mind. Whenever I hit a good shot, I always put that shot in my memory bank. If I hit a bad shot, you know what? Golfing advice, don't ever remember bad shots. Just forget about them. Just let them go. So when I hit a bad shot, I used to take my club and just slam the ground or do something, right? One time, this is kind of embarrassing, but I hit such a bad shot, and it was like so many of them that day, I saw a dandelion, and I just took my club, I took it back, and I just hit the dandelion like it was a ball. And of course, dandelion, the seed pods, just started flying up in the air. They started going in my mouth and up my nose, and I was like, oh man, what did I do that for? And you know, to this day, I remember that shot because of those dandelions. And anytime you like burst out in anger and you like shout at yourself or you throw your club, you just cemented a bad memory in your mind. And you don't want to do that. You want to cement only positive images in your mind. So you hit a good shot, remember those. Have you ever noticed that when Daniel Stratus teaches a Sabbath school class, he will begin by saying, members, what has God done for you this week? What are you thankful for? Would you like to tell us something? Can you speak up and just say, you know what? That is a great opportunity for just 1 week of time to cement in your mind something positive that God has done for you. Man, that's a memory. You gotta have tons of those. You wanna just fill your mind up. The last thing I do, once I have a vision of what I wanna do, I start getting excited. And I, for the first time, I start to think, man, I think I could do this. I'm not afraid of the hazards anymore. I'm not afraid of making a mistake. I'm only thinking positive. That's all I'll let myself think. It's just the positive. I use a trigger. When I'm ready to go, I'll either tug on my shirt sleeve, or I might adjust my cap, or I'll take my glove and I'll put it on and I'll slap the Velcro down. And when I do that, I tell myself, I'm ready to go. And the last thing I remember saying to myself is, Steve-O, it's go time. I step across the line. I line myself up. I stare at the target. Because normally I'm looking at the target like this, but when I'm going to hit a golf shot, I'm stepping sideways. So it looks a little different. So I'm going like that. And when I'm looking at the target, I'm literally staring it down. Even that, when I look back at the ball, that mental image of the flag, it's like it's burned an image on the retina of my eye, and it's sending this message to my brain. Even though my eyes could be closed, I could still see that target off to my left. It's a little bit elevated. I could see the wind blowing right to left. I could see the flag whipping in the wind. It's just so vivid to me. And as I start to swing, the club just goes back. And it's just controlled chaos. Everything is like automatic. And I just hit that ball as hard as I can. And once the ball is gone, my Steve method, it's over. I don't have any more control of the ball. And I'm just watching. And I want to ask you, do you think that my ball lands on the green close to the hole? Or do you think it goes in the water or in the bunker? Well, you know, it does a little of both. And I think that since I started doing it, I have better shots, but I still make mistakes, and they happen. But you know, I don't get mad at myself anymore because I did everything I possibly could think of. What more could I do? What more could I have done? You know, if you make a mistake, instead of getting upset or blaming somebody or making excuses, man, it just becomes evident to me, I need to practice. I just need to practice more. I won't beat myself up. And you know, here's one more thing that happens on a golf course and happens in church is, you know, one time my wife and I, we went to one of her high school reunion parties, and it was the first time I'd met them, and the subject came up of some of the people there golfed, and Gail said, oh, my husband golfs. He golfs all the time. And so this person said, oh, Steve, you golf all the time? Well, how often do you golf? I said, oh, well, not all the time. I golf once a week. Now, to a non-golfer, or somebody that doesn't play a lot, if you do something once a week, that's a lot. That's like all the time, right? Because if you do something once a week, that's like over 50 times a year. And to her, I'm golf all the time. But then I go to church every week, and do people think that, oh, you go to church all the time? No, I just go once a week. It kind of depends on your point of reference, right? Well, they've done this study, and they've determined that if you go golfing once a week, like all the time, you're not going to improve. At the most, you'll probably just remain the same. You'll probably even regress, because once a week is not enough to get better. I say, hey, wait a second. If I apply that same philosophy in my golf thinking, then what about church? You know, if we come to church just one day a week and that's all you do, are you going to get closer to God? I don't know if there's been any official study, but my thinking, my hunch tells me no. You might just tread water if you're lucky. Because in golf, If you want to get better, you have to play once, and you have to practice at least once, one other time, and you might get better. If you really want to get better, you will play twice a week and practice twice a week. That means 4 days out of the week, you've got a golf club in your hand and you're doing something. I mean, playing golf is like learning to play the piano. You can't expect to be a good pianist and you only play once a week. Well, you know, I was thinking, man, I hope that all of us, I mean, I see many of you here every Sabbath, so I know you come to church at least once a week. But can we do something else 3 times? Devotional life that's really, really good at home, because I want to grow and I want to know Jesus as best I can. I want a real clear view of my Lord. It just takes a lot of commitment. If you want to practice, if you really want to get better, you have to practice. And if you really want to get to know the Lord and make him really, really special and close, you got to commit the time. And, you know, golf, there's something else about golf. You know, I golf a lot, but hey, I'm not getting better. Why is that? Well, the fine print on that study was that it doesn't matter just the quantity of practice that you put in, but it also matters the quality of practice that you put in. And it helps if you have somebody there that coaches you and shows you the way. You know, I hope all of our spiritual activities, we use the Holy Spirit to be our guide and our coach. And lastly, I just want to give you one last example in closing of something special that happened to me. See, on one occasion, I made a hole-in-one. And it happened at New Eva Beach Golf Course. And it was kind of special to me because it has the date here, and I did it on my birthday. It's kind of cool. So it has my name, has the date, has the club, and has like the yardage. I don't show too many people this, but since we're golf buddies now, I'll cut you a little slack. Here's the story. The eighth hole at Eva Beach is a par 3. It normally measures 140 yards. There's a green, and next to the green on the left is a pond, large pond. And it kind of wraps around the front also. Well, the day that I was playing there, they had drained the pond, and there was a backhoe digging the dirt, and they were replacing the pipes and the drainage in there. So the hole was still open to use, but for the safety of the construction workers, they had this construction tape on the side. You couldn't go too close to that side, and they moved all the tees up to the ladies' tee. So, as my luck would have it, that's the day I picked to make a hole-in-one, right? Well, I remember teeing my ball up, and I hit it. I didn't know the Steve method then, so I just did the best job I could. I hit it, and the ball actually looked pretty good. And I thought, And I don't like to tell people, but I talk to my ball like it listens, but I tell it, hey, you look pretty good. Don't tease me now. Be nice. Try going the hole. You know, I'm saying all that kind of stuff. I don't know that it actually works, but it makes me feel better. And what ended up happening is I had my hopes so high, and it looked so good. I was like on my tippy toe, bending over. It went right over the flag, and it landed about 10 feet beyond. And it had a little backspin, and it started to come back, but it was just barely trickling. And I didn't think it was going to come all the way back to the hole, so I bent over like this to pick up my tee. And the three of my golf partners, who were very close friends of mine, they started saying, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, Steve, Steve, Steve." And I'm like, what? I'm looking down, looking for my tee, and they go, what are you guys talking about? And before I had a chance to notice, they all threw their hands up in the air. "Hey, you hole out." They were just happy and patting me on the back. Now, it's a tradition in golf that when you hole out, you buy everybody in your group drinks. You got to pick up the tab. So they're slapping me on the back. I thought they were happy for me, but, "Oh, yeah, we get drinks after this. All right. So, you know, the most amazing thing in golf that ever happened to me, I had my head down, and I missed it. Man, I got ripped off. So my advice to you, you know what? I don't care. Don't let life's burdens make you walk around with your head down. You have so much to be thankful for, to look forward to. And, you know, lightning can strike in your favor at any time. Just be there to enjoy it. And don't ever get discouraged. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you guys take aim this week and have a very blessed time. Remember, it's go time. Let's bow our heads. Father in heaven, I thank you for this opportunity to come together and to worship you and to remember that you are a wonderful God. And Lord, I did not put an apology at the beginning of my sermon, but I would like to add one at the end. Please forgive me for my shortcomings and for short-sighted, bad decisions that I have made when I have not consulted you and your heavenly counsel. Lord, please help me to see and speak on behalf of anyone here that we are not victims of bad luck, but oftentimes the victims of our own ignorance. Help us to trust you and to follow you closely. In Jesus' name, amen.